human government. The angels that were looking down from heaven must have been wondering what was going on and how was God going to solve the problem. After 1,500 years of living under conscience, we get to Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, where God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And, of course, we've seen out of this that he got Noah to build an ark, and he filled it with 8 people and all the animals in pairs, except the sacrificial ones that went in by sevens. And then in chapter 7, verses 10 to 12, we read, "And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were upon the earth, and judgment came. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights." So judgment came by water. And, you know, the church used to preach pure judgment to people without mercy. And then now many of the more liberal churches teach pure mercy to people without justice. But we see with God, as we get to know Him, that He is both just and He's merciful. Let's go to chapter 8, right here in Genesis, verses 1 to 13. "And God remembered Noah and every living thing, and all the cattle that was with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters assuaged. The fountains also of the deep and the windows of heaven were stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained. And the waters returned from off the earth continually, and after the end of the 150 days, the waters were abated. After the ark rested in the 7th month of the 17th day of the month upon the mountains of Ararat. And the waters decreased continually until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, were the tops of the mountains seen. And it came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark which he had made, and he sent forth a raven, which went forth to and fro until the waters were dried up from off the earth. Also he sent forth a dove from him to see if the waters were abated from off the face of the ground. But the dove found no rest for the sole of her foot, and she returned unto him in the ark, and the waters were on the face of the whole earth. Then he put forth his hand and took her, and pulled her in unto him in the ark. And he stayed yet another 7 days, and again he sent forth the dove out of the ark. And the dove came in to him in the evening, and lo, in her mouth was an olive leaf plucked off. So Noah knew that the waters were abated from off the earth. And he stayed yet another 7 days, and sent forth the dove, which returned not again unto him any more. And it came to pass in the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, the waters were dried up from off the earth, and Noah removed the covering of the ark, and looked, and behold, the face of the ground was dry." So we've got an empty earth, if you can imagine. There is not a living human being, a living creature on that earth that they look out on. The plants are barely growing again. And he tells them in verse 15, "God spake unto Noah, saying, Go forth of the ark, thou and thy wife and thy sons and their sons' wives with thee. Bring forth with thee every living thing that is with thee of all the flesh, both of fowl and of cattle and of every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, that they may breed abundantly in the earth, and be fruitful, and multiply upon the earth. And Noah went forth, and his sons, and his wife, and his sons' wives with him. Every beast, every creeping thing, and every fowl, and whatsoever creepeth upon the earth, after their kinds, went forth out of the ark." So God wants them to breed abundantly, and to be fruitful, and multiply, and fill the earth. Then let's go to verses 20 to 22. "And Noah built an altar unto the Lord, and took of every clean beast and every clean fowl, and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor, and the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more everything that liveth, as I have done. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease." So he's showing us here that the world is not going to be destroyed again. He's not going to destroy all of mankind in this same way. And also, Noah gave a sacrifice. Now, why would he give a sacrifice? It's the only way for sinful man to approach God. It was the only way then, and it's the only way now. What is our sacrifice? Jesus Christ. Our sacrifice was given for us. They had to provide their own sacrifice. Okay, then let's go to Romans chapter 3, verse 23. Romans chapter 3, verse 23, where the Lord tells us through Paul, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." All have sinned? All of us? Where is the proof of that? Well, Paul explains it to us in Romans chapter 5, verses 12 to 14, where he says, "Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world," and we know that was Adam, "and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. For until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed when there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over them that had not sinned after the similitude," or the, in the same way, "of Adam's transgression, who is the figure that of him who was to come." So here Paul explains to us that sin is what causes death. That's why we die, is because we're sinners. So how many people do you know that don't die? We all die because we're all sinners. That's the proof. What about the best person you have ever known in your life? Did they die? Well, if that's true, if we all are sinners and we're all going to die, can't we do enough good deeds to make up for our bad ones? For an answer to that, we'll go back to Isaiah. And that would be Isaiah chapter 64. Chapter 64, verse 6, where the Lord tells us, "But we are all as an unclean thing, and all our righteousnesses are as filthy rags, and we all do fade as a leaf, and our iniquities like the wind have taken us away." So he's telling us the best deeds that we can do are like filthy rags. We need mercy, is what we need. We deserve justice, but we need mercy. Okay, now let's look at some new instructions back in Genesis. Let's go back to chapter 9, where Noah, you might say, is given his marching orders by the Lord. Noah chapter 9, verses 1 to 6. "And God blessed Noah and his sons, and said unto them, Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth." So again, he wants them to fill up the earth. "And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth, and upon every fowl of the air, upon all that moveth upon the earth, and upon all the fishes of the sea. Unto your hand are they delivered." So he now has dominion over all the animals. "Every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you, even as the green herb have I given you all things." So the Lord here, mankind had just been vegetarian, and now he says they can eat meat also. But he says, "But flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood, therefore shall ye not eat. And surely the blood of your lives will I require, at the hand of every beast will I require it, and at the hand of every man, at the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man." Noah has been put in charge of everything. They now can kill and eat meat, but not the blood. Capital punishment is instituted, but only for murder. Conscience now has some help, and that would be human or political oversight. Sinful man needs controls. There's a book that was published called The Lord of the Flies, where a bunch of young boys were shipwrecked on an island, and they didn't have anybody in charge, and they deteriorated all the way down to where they committed murder. And of course, you know, you've seen what mobs do. People that would never behave like that in a mob behave terribly. They need controls. So, and of course, capital punishment today is a great controversy, but only because we're trying to figure out what man thinks is right or wrong. If we would just go with what God says is right or wrong, the controversy would be over. Now let's look at this great governor, Noah, who has been put in charge of the whole earth. And that would be, we'll start at chapter 9, verse 18. And the sons of Noah that went forth of the ark were Shem and Ham and Japheth. And Ham is the father of Canaan. These are the three sons of Noah, and of them was the whole earth overspread. In other words, mankind came through them. And Noah began to be a husbandman, and he planted a vineyard. And he drank of the wine and was drunken, and he was uncovered within his tent. So what is this telling us? The president king of the earth went and got drunk. Oh no, sin has survived the flood. Let's read verses 22 and 23. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brethren without. And Shem and Japheth took garment and laid it upon their shoulders and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father, and their faces were backward, and they saw not their father's nakedness. What was so bad about that? In those days, it was a very, very shameful thing. So now let's read verses 24 and 25. And Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his younger son had done unto him. And he said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be unto his brethren." So here, what Noah is doing, he's realized that his son did something terrible to him. But he didn't curse Ham, he cursed Canaan, his son's son. Why the son's son? Because in those days, that's how they punished. Let's go to Genesis chapter 10, verses 18 and 19. And the Avradite and the Zemarite and the Hamathite and afterward were the families of the Canaanites spread abroad. And the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon, as thou comest to Gerar, unto Gaza, as thou goest unto Sodom and Gomorrah and Admah and Zeboim, even unto Lasha. And the reason I bring this forth is that, in other words, the Canaanites, the sons of Canaan who had been cursed, spread throughout the land, and they occupied Sodom and Gomorrah. Then let's go to Genesis chapter 13, verses 10 to 13, and get an idea of what developed in Sodom and Gomorrah. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, and it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. So they were exceedingly wicked. And we can see from the time that government was installed in Noah and he went and got drunk to now, we've got wickedness spreading on the earth. We've got a bad start for human government here. But let's go to the end of that government. Ham, whose son was Canaan. Canaan had a son, in other words, Ham's grandson, and his name was Nimrod. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 10, verses 6 to 10. And the sons of Ham, Cush, and Mizraim, and Phut, and Canaan, and the sons of Cush, Seba, and Havilah, and Sabbath, and Ramah, and Sabticha, and the sons of Ramah, Sheba, and Dedan, and Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one in the earth. And he was a mighty hunter before the Lord, wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and Erech, and Akkad, and Calneh, and the land of Shinar. So Nimrod led them to Babel in the land of Shinar. Now let's go to chapter 11, verses 1 to 4. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, "Go to, let us make brick, and burn them thoroughly." And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, "Go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth." Well, there's several things happening here. First, they're trying to make their own way to heaven. What does that remind us of? How about Satan and his promise to Eve that she could be like God if she would just eat of that forbidden fruit? What else are they doing? Who are they? Who do they want to make important? Their name or God's? They want to make their own name important. Is the Lord going to put up with this? He wanted them to scatter all over the earth. They're trying to stay together in one place. They're doing the opposite of what God wants them to do. So let's go verses 5 and 6. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, "Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do." So evil or ungodliness going against God was starting again. They were uniting in vanity. And why were they doing this? Because, or why should they know better? Because man can't reach God by his own effort, nor by trying to make himself self-righteous. But that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to go to heaven on their own. Let's go to Matthew chapter 19, but we'll be right back here. Matthew chapter 19, verses 24 to 26. Where the Lord tells us through Matthew, "And again I say unto you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. When his disciples heard it, they were exceedingly amazed, saying, 'Who then can be saved?' But Jesus beheld them and said unto them, 'With men it is impossible, but with God all things are possible.'" And that's been the case from the beginning until the end. In every case, God has been trying to get man to do it God's way, which is the way that all things are possible. Man keeps trying to do it himself and failing over and over and over again. So they ask, who can be saved? Well, what the answer is, nobody by their own efforts or by their own goodness. But with God, all things are possible. All right, let's go back to Genesis chapter 11, verses 7 to 9. And God says, "Go to, let us go down there and confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of the whole earth. So the Lord still got his way. He confused them with languages, and he scattered them. We need mercy. Whenever we try doing it on our own, we fail. So then the question is, how did man do under conscience plus human government? Well, he failed again. So what's next? Those angels that are looking down are thinking, what is God going to do now? After all, he put Adam and Eve in paradise in total innocence, gave them only one rule, and they failed. They came out and he gave them a conscience so they'd know right or wrong. And from the time Cain killed Abel to the time the whole world failed and the flood came at the time of Noah, they completely failed. Then he appoints Noah and gives a government to help man behave right. And Noah failed. And then a very short period of time later, Nimrod leads everybody to try and be their own gods and find their own way to heaven and ignore God. And so they fail completely too. And of course, we know because we're looking back. We're looking from this wonderful time of the grace of God back. We know that now what he's going to do is he's going to call out a single man, one man named Abram out of a pagan world. And he's going to do something very special. And we'll cover that next week.